Geico presents sharing versus oversharing. Earlier this week, Claire Tippins shared a princess nickname generator, 3 pictures of her dog wearing a tutu, and 2 online quizzes, including, what candy is your dream castle made of? Claire, your sharing has tipped the sugar scale and turned into oversharing. But have no fear, princess. Geico has something worth sharing with your internet kingdom, like how you could save hundreds on your car insurance just by visiting geico.com. No magic wand required. Geico, 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, this is Andre Cohen calling, and we're glad that you can join us today for our show today. And today's topic, we'll talk about a couple of things, but one of the things that we'll talk about is tell the truth, black people are racist too. And we'll examine the ways in which African Americans can also be racist. Now, I know some of my brothers and sisters out there that are in the struggle might have some difficulties with that concept of black people being racist also, but we'll talk about that. Come to some understandings about some particular things, and need to find found some ways to be a little more productive. And so I just want to share, I saw the movie Contagion this weekend, and I found it to be very interesting. The story took some twists that I was not anticipating. Because a lot of times, because I've often wondered, how is it that in real life, or at least it seems that everybody gets sick and everyone ails, but in the movies, it seems that the heroes or the helpers that go out to help with diseases and epidemics, they never get sick. And so there were some twists and turns in that movie that I thought were very interesting. The movie was also set in Minneapolis, and I did also find it interesting that in the whole film, having a movie set in Minneapolis, specifically in Minneapolis, it wasn't like it said, you know, one of the suburbs or anything like that. I did not see, I think I saw 2 people of color, and knowing Minneapolis specifically, that the city itself is a bit more diverse than how it was portrayed in the movie. However, this is a twisted feeling, and this kind of segues into the other part of our conversation. It was very interesting to see looting and robbing and, you know, larceny happening in this film. Particularly by the non people of color that they showed. So they showed a number of white people pilfering and committing larceny and looting and all of this stuff as a part of the film's theme. So I thought that was kind of interesting because a lot of that behavior is definitely associated particularly with people of color, and more specifically, black people in particular. So I thought the movie was interesting in that respect. So I'd encourage you to go see it. I think it'll change how you relate. And it kind of also explains ways in which the rest of the world kind of interacts with each other. And, you know, in Asia, specifically in China, people wear face masks. And I think they did the same in Japan, depending on conditions and that kind of stuff. So, but here in the United States, that would be considered to be rude. It would be considered to be embarrassing and scary to walk around wearing face masks. But I think we also have a particular way in which we operate. I think particularly in a number of the Asian countries, not only are they trying to protect themselves, but they're trying to protect others. And in the United States, we see the protection of others as almost a sign of weakness, in a sense. And so you wouldn't dare wear a face mask or some kind of air ventilator because you should be strong enough and independent enough on your own to survive these kinds of things. And I'm not sure if that's the motif that we want to portray, but it's certainly one that that resonates in our popular media and our popular culture around what it means to be American, what it means to be ourselves. So, but that takes me to my next piece, which is talking about this concept of Black people being racist too. And I think all too often, it's particularly in the work that I do and in circles that I've run, that I've run into two kinds of trainers. One are the kind of the militant Black, pro-Black, or pro whatever the ethnic group is, trainer who somewhat loses their audience because they can't be open enough to explore what's really going on with people. And then the other type of trainer that I've met is the guilty white person who typically operates from a place of shame or embarrassment or guilt, typically for and about things that they had no control over. So I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about each one of those and how they're problematic and how as helpers in our field we can kind of overcome that stuff, as well as people who are looking for trainers. What do you look for in a really good trainer, or how do you find a trainer that fits you and your organization? So we'll talk about those two things as we look at how Black people are racist too. And so when I was coming up, my mentors and the people that taught me gave me a definition of racism that I held for a long time. And so part of what I've tried to do in my learning about, in my studies about this field, is really get an understanding of where they were coming from. So I believe they were doing the best they could with what they had in terms of what people had told them, what they had learned, and so they imparted that into me. And I did find some room for growth and development in that. So I'm going to share some of that stuff with you today. And so the basic or the traditional way of looking at racism or defining racism is defining racism as a system of power that I'll give you the equation that was given to me, that race plus power equals racism. And so your racial background plus power equals racism. And typically what people would say is, in a traditional sense, that Black people, quote-unquote Black people, don't have power on a systemic level that white people have. And so therefore, white people are racist and Black people can never be racist because we don't have the systemic or the power dynamic that white people have. And I can understand, particularly in the 80s and 90s, where this kind of thought process was coming from. I mean, it's not, and I can see that, there's a power differential between white people and Black people. A prime example of that is, when a lot of times, at least in the media, the way it's portrayed in the popular news media, when a white woman, there have been several instances where a white woman has done something bad, or either kidnapped her own children, murdered her own children, tried to do a particular act of violence against someone, or claims that it's been perpetrated against her, that she would say that it was done by a black guy or a gangster. And, no doubt the police have no end of suspects that they could pick up for that crime. People have been detained for that crime, and in some cases been convicted of crimes that they actually did not commit, only because it had the word of this white woman. And what would happen is at some point the story would unfold and find that this woman had made up the whole thing. But I found it interesting, and oftentimes there are real suspects off of this fictitious crime. So that would lend itself to start to really think about the fact that white race or white racism actually equals power, and so therefore, obviously, black people cannot be racist. And so, with the other side of that same coin is, although black people cannot be racist, what typically gets talked about is how noble, in particular, black people are for suffering through white racism. And so, living with what white racism has made us more noble and more skillful and more spiritual because we've gone through this injustice. And what I would like to say is that that's not necessarily true. And given the current situation in the world, particularly in the United States, that may be even less true than it may have been in the past. I don't know that the injustices that our kids are facing right now, the ways in which they're operating in the world, suggest that they've become highly evolved or have a cultural centeredness about themselves. I do believe that they have been succumbed and usurped into kind of, I think in the 80s we had the me generation where it was all about the big 80s. And it seems as though we're now in a hyper narcissistic society where, no matter what your race or color is, it is, every person or, as the kids would say, every dog for itself, that everybody's going to get theirs. And so I don't know that has necessarily happened, that black people in particular have become noble. But what I will say is that with the way the media portrays particularly African-Americans, and I'm speaking very much in black and white terms, I know that there are folks in between the middle, but the conversation typically falls along those two lines. And so I want to think about those things in particular. And so in the popular media, what typically is portrayed is, gangsters, thugs, people with low moral integrity, folks with high who abuse money or don't know what to do with particular resources. Black people are typically portrayed in those ways. And it's so funny because I was watching this video called The Church, and there's a guy called the Black Preacher. And the funniest thing about the show isn't necessarily the comedy itself, because it's not particularly brilliant or anything like that, but the thing that makes that online cartoon so funny is that it actually portrays how people really act in a church setting. And so, there are all these characters in the church, and they kind of portray those. And so what ends up happening is there becomes this cycle where art reflects back to us life, but then we look at that art and we assume that that's what life is, and so we start acting like the images in the media that actually are reflections of us. And so we get this crazy distortion of looking at the mirror and thinking that the mirror is giving us, is producing these images, when in fact they are reflecting those images. And so after a while of listening to media, listening to certain types of music, looking at certain types of magazines and reading certain types of things in the paper, it becomes extremely difficult to not fall into the trap of believing what the mirror says. And so I don't know if you've taken this this test at on the Harvard website, but it's the implicit bias test. And I'd encourage you to take that test because you may find yourself being somewhat surprised by the results of one of the tests that you take. And the basic premise of the test is that they give you a list of words, positive words and negative words. And so you click on the positive words and the negative words, and they measure how quickly you do that. And then they give you a set of pictures of in this particular case, of people who are white and people who are black. And then you categorize those individuals. And so you click on a white person and you click on a black person, and they measure how quickly you're able to do that. And then the third step in the process on this implicit bias website is that they put the two they put the images together and they put the words together, and they tell you put this picture with this word, all right? And so which picture goes with which word? And so they end up having words like they'll have a picture of an African American, and they'll have a word like love. And you have to decide very quickly if that's a good thing or a bad thing, and so forth and so on. And one of the things that is very interesting is that over and over and over again, people have reported, and I've taken it myself, and I was actually shocked that for some reason I have a preference on that test for whiteness in white people. And if you remember Dr. Clark's experiment that helped to end separate but equal, what Dr. Clark found was that an overwhelmingly number of kids preferred white dolls over black dolls and saw themselves as being white dolls more so than they were black dolls. And then Anderson Cooper 360 did a follow-up piece on that and found very similar things to Dr. Clark's original experiment. And although there were some really profound changes where there were kids, both black and white, who had parents that really had worked with them and talked with them about these issues that were able to kind of help them overcome those barriers. But consistently, black people had shown some preference for whiteness. And so that goes back to my original statement that black people can be racist too. And so what is it that actually helps us to define what racism is and how black people are racist? And there are two things that I want to talk about at this point. One is something called internalized oppression, and that's when the external world continues to bombard you with these images until they become part of your internal world, right? So you start off trying to defend yourself against all of these things, but at some point you get so overwhelmed by those images that you actually start to internalize that, believe it about yourself, and then also start to raise your children in that way of thinking and that way of living. And so internalized oppression happens. And I think part of that shows up in the way in which African-Americans will refer to each other as nigga. You know, hey, what's up, my nigga? How you doing, my nigga? They've been bombarded with all these negative images, and so they try to take that on and make it something beautiful. When in fact, I'm not sure that that's possible, but that's a whole other conversation as well. And so there is that, but I also think that there are some societal, primal human things that are also happening that make African Americans or black people racist as well. And I think part of our conditioning in our society or our social development as a human species lends itself to some of our most primal and basic instincts. And so, if we think about whether you believe in evolution or creation, that is not the point. But at some point, our human ancestors did not live in buildings. At some point, they lived among and with the elements. And so, having said that, there were lions, tigers, and bears. Oh, my. And so our ancestors at some point had to deal and negotiate life with those wild animals. And so if you think about the construct of an ancestor being out in the woods and having to deal with the lions and the bears and the bobcats and whatnot, humans don't make, on their own, do not make very good predators. But as a group, we make fantastic predators. And so as small groups of people kind of moved across the landscape, they found themselves being victim and prey to some of these larger predators. And so, nighttime would be a very terrifying time for our early human ancestors. You can't see, you don't know when predators are around, you can't defend yourself very well. And so we have a fear of darkness, of night. And so, given that, the safest time for human beings, particularly as we were moving across the landscape in small groups, was the daytime, because as a predator, we could relax, we could, move about the landscape relatively freely. We could see predators. We really developed our ability to become predators during those daylight hours. And so we began to say that day is good and night is bad. And so that's part of our primal instinct. That's how we developed as a human species. And so given that, I think some of those primal instincts have not gone away. I mean, people respond to fire in a very primal way. People respond to hunger in a very primal way. And I think that people refer to or deal with, the light and the dark in some very primal ways. And so, black people being racist too really goes back, I think, to some of those primal instincts that we have to, as human beings, overcome. Because I know that in the work that I've done, I've seen some white people really do powerful, good things and stand up in ways and interact with people that is just powerful. At the same time, I've also been in situations, and I've seen situations across the world and all throughout history where black people, given the same opportunity, betray themselves and act very similar to the oppressors that they so-called liberated themselves from. And so Paulo Freire talked a lot about how in his book, The Pedagogy of the Oppressed, how without really thinking about it, when the oppressed liberate themselves, they become the new oppressor. And so, why, Andre, are you talking about black people being racist too? Well, I want us to find that third way, because as demographics change, as people move around the world and our world becomes smaller and the resources that we have to depend on become much more integral to all of our survival, I think it's important that we realize that we all have a part to play in this, and we can all be positive, and we can all create that sense of brotherhood and sisterhood. At the same time, to be cognizant that we all have fallen short. We all have human frailties. The systems that we create are flawed and faulty. The people that we are oftentimes also flawed and faulty, and and that the human relationships that we've created, we can recreate new ones if they no longer work for us. And so what I don't think that, you know, the old conversation that white people are racist and black people aren't isn't helpful for advancing a number of the ways that we think in our society. I'll be extremely happy when white people get as upset about racism and injustice as I do. I will be ecstatic when men get so frustrated with sexism and gender bias that they stand up with their other guy friends and say something about it and do something about it. I'll be happy when we can look out into the world and see the fact that even though my faith may be different than yours, you have a right to exercise your faith as much as I have to exercise the right to exercise my faith. And so I think a lot of that that old school way of thinking about diversity and thinking about you know the role that you know race plays and how we interact it's not helpful. It's not moving us further along. I believe that when black people and white people get together and start having real conversations within their own groups, that white people sit with other white people and say, hey, we got to do something about this social injustice and social imbalance. And black people get together and say, as black people, we got to figure out how to work more efficiently and more effectively with white people and natives and Hmong and so forth and so on. And, you know, when Somalis and Ethiopians and Native Americans and Hispanic Americans and Asian Americans, Hmong Americans, Karen Americans, get together and start figuring out how to interact with each other in a more positive way, I think we'll start to really move some things. And I want to, you know, just touch on this concept of race because it always seems to come up. And, you know, what is race? And, you know, it took me a while to come to an understanding about this, but it's an anthropological way of defining and separating people in order to make profit, because race is not biological. It's determined by government, and governments decide when and how they want to define people in order to separate folks in the pursuit of creating some kind of monetary system or continuing some kind of monetary system. I think about why white people brought black people to the Americas as slaves. And a lot of people want to talk about the you know, they have low moral character, that they did, you know, they did it because they were evil or, you know, they're Satan. And what I like to offer is I don't think those things are true. What I do think is true is that they were operating from a place where profit was important, particularly to those who were in power. And so other folks were sold the concept that you can also have power by participating in this system. And so ultimately, white people brought black people to the New World as slaves because they wanted to increase their profits. And so it's not a moral thing, but it is something to think about. And had other people thought about that idea, they may have also conducted themselves in a similar manner. And so what we have to do is look at that profit motive and say, how do we deconstruct that? How do we get greed out of our system? How do we create a world of full of opportunities for people to have equal access to goods, jobs, services, and money? One of my favorite songs in the 80s was by the group Sting, and it was I Hope the Russians Love Their Children Too. And so until we get to a point that we as human beings in society see other people's children as our own, this civil rights movement will still maintain itself at a slow crawl. And so with that, I'll leave you with those things to think about. If you have any questions, comments, or observations, please feel free to contact me at andrecohen.com. That's A-N-D-R-E-K-O-E-N Com. I'd be more than excited to hear from you and see what your thoughts are on our program. And if you'd like to be a special guest, please send me an email at andre@amhorizons.com. Until next time, this is Andre Cohen, and we'll see you in cyberspace. Have a great day.
Hey, it's Flo, and this is my impression of a person having a phone conversation in the elevator.
What? Yeah, no, I'm in the elevator. The elevator! Yeah! Anyway, I bundled our home and auto insurance through Progressive. No, bundled! We're gonna save big bucks now. No! Bucks! Bucks!
Bundle your home and auto through Progressive and save.
Hello? Hello? She hung up.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company Affiliates. Home insurance provided and serviced by other select insurers.